driving. Bill Lane crosses up. Van Hula, okie doke move, and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get on a rebound. Kicks it out. Kansas Sykes for three. No,
from local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Happy Thursday, Birds, and if you're a Bears fan, I hope you have an Amazon Prime subscription, because tonight is Thursday Night Football between the Bears and the Commanders. We'll talk about that later in the show, but first, I want to introduce myself, Mikey Frenelli, alongside David Moses and Dane Dreyfus. Guys, how are we doing today?
Existence is pain. The Cardinals lost, the Packers lost, the Blackhawks lost, the Leafs lost. It's not good, Mikey.
That's a great spread of teams.
Thank you.
David?
Doing pretty good, man. My Bears play tonight. Hopefully we'll get a win. Like you said, we'll talk about it a little bit later in the show. But, I mean, you know, it's perfect time for some Bears football. The fall weather
bear
outside
weather
is amazing. Right. Bear weather. It's just a really good time right now.
So I think we're going to start the show talking a little bit first about the National Hockey League, which has been something Dane's been wanting to do for a couple weeks. Dane and I both played hockey as kids growing up, but I think Dane's stuck with watching it a little bit more than I have over the years. But I think we're going to do a little bit of a hockey segment here as the NHL kicks it off, or has its puck drop, I should say. So Dane, take it away with what you think for this season.
I mean, as a Blackhawks fan,
mm-hmm.
the more we lose, the better I feel.
You're just ready for just the number one pick?
Well, because the first overall pick this year is the best since Connor McDavid.
Yeah, and I've seen a little bit about that. That's pretty crazy.
It's the and even if we don't get first, if we finish in last, the way the lottery works is the worst pick you can get is third, because the lottery is only the first two picks.
Mm-hmm.
And the top three this year is loaded. There's three studs. One kid's actually playing locally in Chicago. He plays for the Chicago Steel, who play out of Fox Valley Ice Arena in Geneva, Illinois. So that's Adam Fantilli. Where the kid that everyone wants though, and everyone's watching is Connor Bedard. That's the guy. That's the guy to get.
Oh my goodness! It's just, this is what it feels like to be a New York Knicks fan. The Chicago Bulls are in full rebuild mode. Seems like we haven't had a lot of success, you know, since our last Stanley Cup championship. But you know, here we have a new head coach, Luke Richardson, who's in his first year as a head coach. It's going to be interesting to see how he handles the challenge of managing a team with not a lot of upside. What do you think, Dan?
So he said before the season that he wanted to make the general manager's job for the Blackhawks increasingly difficult, because it's obviously a rebuild and they're obviously tanking. But I like the hire personally. Luke Richardson, known as a player's coach, a signing the Blackhawks made was Max Domi. And the second Luke Richardson signed with the Blackhawks, Max Domi called his agent and said, I want to go play in Chicago. So this team's going to be fun.
Had a goal
to watch
last night, too.
He did. It was a nice play. I believe it was on the power play.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? Love pumping up Taves' stats, too, right away,
mm-hmm.
getting a power play goal. But this team is just going to be atrocious.
But, you know, in the coming years, it's interesting to see how we're going to use our draft picks in the future, because we have a good number of, we have a total of 9 picks in the 2023 draft. 2 of them are first round picks, while 6 are within the first 3 rounds.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got 2 guys who are arguably our best players in Patrick Kane and, Jonathan Toews, who
Taves.
Taves are in.
It's a tongue twister.
Yeah, it's a tongue twister for sure. Who are in contract years, so it's going to be interesting to see if we keep them, re-sign them, or if we, you know, send them off maybe for some more draft picks or better assets, you know, going forward.
I loved last night watching how every time Devin Taves and the Avalanche got the puck, they had to clarify that it was Devin Taves, it was both. But when,
I think it's
but
Devon,
when,
actually.
However you say it. Yeah. But when Jonathan Taves got the puck, it was just Taves. He's a generational player. And
yeah.
I'm pretty confident that's a pretty common last name in Canada, too, I think. But I think last night watching the Hawks, and aside from it just being painful the whole time, because it's like when Bryce Harper played his first game as a Philly in Washington, listening to Eddie Olczyk announce, I know he's always on national games, but listening to Eddie Olczyk announce the Hawks' first game of the year after kind of a kind of a tough split over the summer where he left them, declined a contract, I believe, and then went to the Kraken. They never offered him one, right?
They absolutely lowballed him. Eddie was very emotional about it.
No, I know, and then have him have to go for the first game of the year, still be a Hawks announcer, essentially, is still a little weird.
And he's locally for Seattle now.
Yeah.
He's a Seattle color commentator.
He'll still be doing the Hawks occasionally on National if they still decide to put the Hawks National here and there. But I think the biggest issue with last night, and I think anyone who watched could see it, was four of the Avalanche's goals came on power play. And yes, the Colorado Avalanche, coming off a Stanley Cup, have a great offense, especially on the power play. Their attack is insane. But as a Blackhawks fan, just watching that, it's like, you could limit silly penalties, but you can also just find ways to just hold them at least a couple times, because it wasn't an awful game the whole time. I mean, there was a couple moments where I thought the Blackhawks had a chance if they were able to stop them here and there.
Well, the way I like to measure like a good team, depending on their system, where the Blackhawks play a little bit more zone coverage than they do man-on-man, which they did under Jeremy Colliton, is the way I like to evaluate a team is that they have to average 10 shots a period unless they play a very defensive system. The Blackhawks don't play a defensive system.
No.
They play a very high mobile, very offensive, like get the defenseman involved in the play system. And they had 17 shots on net. Which
compared to what, like 25, 26 for Colorado? Like
it was upwards of 30.
Yeah.
Mrazek didn't look bad.
And he had a couple nice saves. He had a really nice save or two at the end, but then just kind of collapsed with the two late goals by the Avalanche. But early in the third period, looked pretty good.
So going forward, I got a question for you, Dane.
Yeah.
With this team, it's obviously a work in progress. Mm-hmm. How much of a leash do you think management is giving this new head coach, you know, knowing that he doesn't have that much to work with, mm-hmm. you know, talent-wise? It's going to be a tough year. There are going to be some downs, more downs than ups. What do you think his leash is looking like?
He's going to be a 2 or 3 year coach. He's going to be a stopgap. A good comparison would be Detroit's coach and Jeff Blashill, which I think he's honestly kind of overstayed his welcome a little bit. But as far as the rebuild goes, if they get the first overall pick, if they get a top three pick this year, the rebuild will be expedited because they've got a lot of assets to use. Their draft picks this year, I liked Frank Nazar getting that in the DeBrincat trade. And believe it or not, I loved what Kyle Davidson's done with the team, because the DeBrincat trade, like DeBrincat made it very public or post-trade that he was not re-signing in Chicago, especially mm-hmm. with the current team and the current...
Enjoyed his time, but wasn't willing to sit through a rebuild when he's in about to be the prime of his career as a great hockey player.
Right, and then also, too, he goes to a team that's up and coming in the Ottawa Senators. And then I love the player we got in Frank Nazar. I think he could be a future captain of the team. Actually, that wasn't even the pick for DeBrincat. That was the Kevin Korchinski pick. So the Kirby Doc pick was the Frank Nazar, which Kirby mm-hmm. Doc has looked good under the Canadiens, who beat my second favorite team, the Maple Leafs. But overall for the Blackhawks, I'm looking up. They're going to sell pieces, and I would expect Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews to be in different uniforms by the end of the year.
That was my next question. I was going to actually propose, who do you think is a Blackhawk for the longest from here, Toews or Kane?
I think Toews, because his contract is tough to move, but I see Toews.
I don't think Toews will get moved at this point. I think he'll just fizzle out on his own as a Blackhawk. I used to think he'll get moved.
They're going
to
pump up his stats. He'll get moved.
He'll get pumped up enough where a team will be like, yeah, we can take a chance on veteran leadership.
It'll be a contending team that takes half of his salary, and Edmonton has already been kicking tires on him, which honestly I think it makes a lot of sense.
Put him
for
back
Edmonton.
With Duncan Keith. Is Duncan Keith still playing this year?
He retired.
Oh, he did end up retiring?
The Blackhawks got hit with something called a cap recapture penalty. So they got money put back on their salary cap, because even though they signed a completely legal contract at the time it was signed, they get penalized because the NHL is awesome at getting in their own way. But yeah, and then so I'm guessing Jonathan Toews ends up as a Boston Bruin, because I feel like he fits that mold too.
That'd be crazy.
That's a team whose window is closing fast. Or he goes to Edmonton, who I have as my cup champ this year. And then Kaner, he's going to New York. It's either the Rangers or the Sabres. And I think the team that makes the most sense, if they can get a deal in place, like as an extension, would be the Buffalo Sabres. And they could get some really good prospect pieces in a first-round pick.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. What's the asking price for these two players? It kind of seems like you would kind of want to go in the direction of draft pieces to kind of get those younger guys and build around this new, you know, regime, this new head coach, and start to build a foundation.
Unless Jonathan Toews has a renaissance season, he's not going for more than, I'd say, a second, maybe a middle-tier prospect, with salary retained, of course.
That's the problem, though. I mean, do you think I don't think Davidson cares, but do you think the fans would care if they do trade Jonathan Toews for peanuts? Or would
no.
they rather just let him retire as a Blackhawk
fan? It depends on if you care about winning. I'm a Blackhawks fan. I love Toews, love Kane. Taves got paid for what he did, not what he was going to do. Kane deserved every penny of that contract we gave him. Personally, as a Blackhawks fan, I want to win.
I think they're really playing the nostalgia card now, though, which is why I think it's going to be tough for them to pass off trading Jonathan Toews. And I think it would be smart at this point, but I think they're going to keep trying to play that nostalgia card. I don't think Marian Hossa should be a retired number for the Blackhawks, but they're playing that this year.
Wow.
They're playing that card this year. I think the only three that should have come out as, you know, all-time Blackhawks greats from that crew, you know, in the rafters would have been Keith Toews and Kane. But you induct Hossa into that Blackhawks Hall of Fame type thing, and you have to think about Patrick Sharp then. You have to think about Corey Crawford then.
So
Hossa's the best of that B tier, but he's not in the A tier with Keith and Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane.
But Marian Hossa's a Hall of Famer.
Right. I know he's a Hall of Famer as of last year, but does every Hall of Famer have to be a retired number for a team?
If they're part of three cups, then yeah.
But he only played for 7 years, seven, 8 years, whatever it was.
With the Blackhawks, for hockey, that's half of your career, and he won three cups with the team. He was part of the core.
Well, he was an essential piece. I'm not saying he's not, but he was like the Andre Iguodala of that team.
That's so disrespectful.
You literally just read my mind. I said the exact
same thing.
That's so disrespectful.
But why do you think so?
Because Marian Hossa is a 50-goal scorer, and Andre Iguodala isn't a Hall of Famer. Like, he wasn't the glue
piece.
That's
fair. That's a good point.
Like, Marian Hossa had... I'll tell you what. Like, his best years were not in Chicago.
Yes.
And he was the finishing piece that...
They wouldn't win without him, but I don't think he is considered an all-time Blackhawks great. In the same valor of Jonathan Toews or Patrick Kane, I'll say.
I could agree with that, but I don't think that takes away from anything he accomplished. And I'll tell you what... Crawford's number. Crawford was part of two cups. He will not have his number retired.
No, I don't expect him to. I don't think he deserves it at the end of the day.
Seabrook's number is going to be retired. But
that opens up for Seabrook or Hossa, too. Yeah, Hossa opens up Seabrook then, too.
But you know why they're going to retire Seabrook's?
Why?
Because Chris Chelios is going to get it retired along with Brent Seabrook.
Well, that's so, long overdue, I think. That one
couldn't agree
happen,
more. Yeah. But the five numbers that will be retired will be Kane, Toews, Hossa. Sorry, Sharp is in the Hall very good. He's not going to get retired, actually.
Yeah, agreed.
My first favorite Blackhawk growing up. And then Keith and Seabrook. So you have five players that were part of all three cups, and I think that's perfect. You basically just cemented your first line retired.
Yeah, that's a good point. And yeah, Sharp is like the last one out for that kind of thing, or first one out. And Chelios should actually as well. That's long overdue for an American-born hockey player. He was a stud. I mean, he's up there with Kane as some of the best from the U.S.
Now, in regards to Patrick Kane and where he's going... That he could have been moved before the season, but I think the move is at the deadline. I think he could have been moved at the draft, but I think Davidson thinks he can get more at the deadline from a team like the New York Rangers or the Sabres. If the Sabres are in a playoff spot come the deadline, they're going to get a haul. They're going to get, I think, a Jack Quinn, who is probably a top 15 prospect in the league. They'll get a first. But I have the Rangers as a dark horse because they have some cap issues. The Sabres have $20 million in cap. They could take on Kane's whole contract.
If you give Artemi Panarin and Patrick Kane a chance to rebuild their playoff identity, that would be scary. Because the only time we got to see them play in the playoffs together was those 2 years against Nashville and St. Louis, right?
And those were...
And they didn't really click in the playoffs aside from the regular season.
They lost in seven to St. Louis. That was just a good St. Louis team. And Stan Bowman panicked when they got swept by Nashville, who was the Western Conference representative in the Cup. Panarin never should have been traded. I did actually like that Jalmerson for Murphy trade. That actually was
and
probably,
it kind of worked out a little bit. Connor Murphy's been a solid defenseman for the Hawks for a couple
years.
It
more than worked out. Yeah. Like that one gets thrown away. But Leo Stotterer will die on the table of Tara Vinenhill. And I will too, because he was my favorite Blackhawk in high school.
He was awesome.
But Patrick Kane to the Rangers could happen because they just picked up another asset. They traded one of their defensive prospects because their blue line is so loaded. They traded Nils Lundqvist to the Stars, who I don't think are a playoff team, so they traded a lottery first-round pick, though I do think it's lottery-protected, to the Rangers, and I think the Rangers might be able to get Patrick Kane with only sending salary and not touching their roster, who has young players in Kaapo Kakko, who I'm not interested in, and Alexis Lafreniere, who I would do for Patrick Kane one-for-one.
So I think to round out the segment, I think we're gonna do this when we talk about the NBA a little bit later too, but let's just go around and give who we think is your favorite early on, maybe not even favorite, but just someone you think has a chance to win the Cup. Dan, I'll let you go first.
Connor McDavid is entering his prime and he already has two MVPs. He also has an MVP in Leon Draisaitl with him. They're getting a full year of Evander Kane. They figured out their goaltending situation. The league's going to get put on notice by this guy who literally cannot be stopped, can only be tried to contain. And I have the Oilers beating the Leafs in my Cup final. The Cup is coming back to Canada for the first time. Wouldn't in that over be 20 something? Years.
Those two fan bases that constantly get beat up because they're great historic teams, but they just haven't been able to make it back to the top mm-hmm. in recent years. So that'd be great if those two had to play in the cups, and one of them was the highest of high, and one was lowest.
Well, you'd have three former league MVPs and
Draisaitl, McDavid, and Matthews.
Yep,
proud of myself for getting that one.
I mean, those are probably that's probably your top three forwards in the NHL right now.
Yeah,
too.
That's a pretty good one.
Kind of a scapegoat pick.
That'd be pretty awesome.
Colorado is also pretty balanced, but who do you think? Who do you like?
I don't know. I'm looking over just the total odds right now, and I kind of like the Rangers if they do the right thing at the deadline. I think I can totally see Kane going there. I was thinking about that already too, and I think that's kind of a long shot right now without him, but. Generally, they had a nice first game against the Lightning the other night. I was impressed, and I think the Rangers could do it.
It's a good pick. Their goaltending is unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Give me the Colorado Avalanche for the second time in 2 years. I think they're in a win-now mode. They got the much-needed pieces that they needed over the offseason. I just think they're going to do it and do 2 years in a row.
You know, David, that's a really good pick, too, and I think it would be very frustrating because I usually like to root for a team that hasn't won when the Blackhawks and Leafs aren't doing so hot. But they lost a piece in Nazem Kadri, but they brought back key pieces in Valeri Nichushkin. They got him locked up, and they got MacKinnon locked up. Makar is on a sweetheart of a deal. He's getting less than Seth Jones. The kid has a Norris.
I love that commercial. Sorry to cut you off. I love the commercial they were playing it last night during the Hawks game of Cale Makar and Connor McDavid. It's for like the new sponsor. It's those energy drinks. Or I think they're like Gatorade kind of thing. Yeah, and the commercial is literally Cale Makar saying, "We got to get down on McDavid. We got to cover him," or something like that. Like, I don't know how they got him to read that script. Like, the commercial is basically him saying, "Oh, yeah, McDavid's better. Let's go play." Like, it's Cale Makar is a great player, too. So it's pretty funny. But you can't dispute that Connor
McDavid's that good.
Is a generational talent. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we have a very interesting interview to share with you. We'll tease that a little bit, and we'll come back here on The Red Zone.
This is Barstool Big Cat, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Coming off four conference championships in a row, the Redbird volleyball team now sits at 1-6 in conference, 8-10 overall on the start to their season. And just to put salt in the wound, losing two of their veteran players this week to medical retirements. Dane and I had the chance to sit down with Nicole Lund earlier today, and we had a great interview with her. And we're going to let you guys take a listen right now. All right, Nicole, so thank you again for joining us for this. So first and foremost, can you take us through what the last couple weeks have been as you debated this process of retiring for medical reasons?
Yeah, it was actually super, super stressful. I didn't anticipate that I would actually come to this decision, It actually started about a year ago. I've had a lot of reoccurring injuries throughout my 4 years here. So about a year ago, it kind of popped into my head, the question of medical retirement, but I never thought I would get to that point. You know, sometimes you like set a timeline for yourself. You're like, just one more injury, you know what I mean? But it got to the point a few weeks ago where it came down to it. And it was helpful to talk to family and just like close people, you know, had to talk to doctors and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, it was my decision, which I think I was so stressed about. And like, it's ending a chapter of my life that's been a part of my life ever since I was like 8 years old. So that was a super, super hard decision for me. And it put a lot of stress on me the past couple weeks, but I knew it was the right decision for my future. So
was there any point in the last year or so where doctors were telling you it would be smart to retire at that time and you said, no, I can keep going for a while?
It never was like, you need to be done. It was kind of always like, it's your choice. They're like, either way, we would back you medically to retire. They're like, sometimes you have to think about life outside volleyball. And so I was kind of like, yeah, you know what I mean? But not in the past year, no one was ever really like, you need to retire. It was just, I kind of was trying to push it to the back of my head because, you never want it to actually happen. You know what I mean? So
first of all, congratulations on a great career. I mean, Missouri Valley.
Thank you.
Like, that's very, very cool and a huge accomplishment. But you talked a little bit about life after volleyball. So what's next for you?
Yeah, so I'm actually a marketing major. I don't exactly have a game plan, have it all mapped out. I know I'm doing some kind of marketing internship in the spring. I'm kind of in the works with that. But Yeah, I'm hoping with that internship, I can kind of like try out a bunch of different things to see if I find like a path. I think right after I graduate in the spring, I'm going to apply for, or in December, and like now I'm going to try and find a grad school to go to. So not quite yet jumping into a real job, but grad school, hopefully.
Do you plan on staying involved with the team in any capacity?
I actually, with just like the injuries that I did sustain, practices and like being super involved wasn't really in the picture, which is okay. So I'm still a part of the team. I'm still communicate with the team, but as far as like being a part of practices and being able to travel with games, that's not really in the plan, which that's been hard, but it is for the best.
How much you've talked to you have with your teammates going into this decision? And obviously with KP following a similar track yesterday, was there a lot of talk just in general between the two of you?
Yeah, there was a lot of talk between the two of us. So I mentioned like how it was brought up a year ago. She was kind of in the talk too a year ago. So it's just like we've kind of had each other's back throughout this whole thing. And not that you would ever wish this upon anyone, but there's comfort in knowing someone is going through the same situation as you, someone that you're close to. So, I mean, I would never wish this upon KP, but it has been nice just having guidance to talk with her and like talk through problems throughout the past couple weeks. But as far as my teammates and coaches go, they were super, super supportive. I never got any like retaliation back to what I was saying. Like it was always super positive and everyone just wanted me to make the best decision for myself.
So I was rereading a story that a reporter of ours, Jake Fogel, did a couple years ago about you and KP both coming up in Minnesota. And obviously you guys had that connection all throughout high school, even before college, and maybe came together to ISU. Obviously you're a year older, but
yeah.
What does she mean to you in general? I know it's just maybe partly a coincidence that both you guys retired this week, but what does she mean to you?
Yeah, KP has actually had like just a big impact in my life. You know, actually in high school, we weren't super, super close, which would be weird because we played on the same club team for a few years. But in our college career, we've gotten a lot closer and it's been super nice to just develop that friendship. You know, she's always someone I can go to, whether it's outside of volleyball, with volleyball. I know she's going to be in my life forever. So it's just super nice that now even we're both done with volleyball, we can grow our relationship even more like outside of volleyball. Does that make sense? You know what I mean? Because it was majority through volleyball because that's what we would spend all our time doing. But now we can grow it outside of volleyball. And I'm excited to see like how she grows in her future. So, yeah.
What was your favorite memory you made while playing volleyball at Illinois State?
Oh, that's a good one. There's a lot of favorite memories, but I think the top memory would definitely be when we reverse swept Loyola in the tournament last year. That was like an all-time favorite memory. It was like no one thought we were going to do it, but like we were determined. So especially since Loyola, when they were in our conference, they were definitely like our biggest rival. I don't know. It was just like we would always butt heads whenever we played, so it was super nice to beat them.
So there is a lot of season left, and with you and KP leaving, where does that leave a lot of the other team? Have you had a chance to speak with them about how they're feeling about the rest of the season, especially with a lot of them being younger?
Yeah, I've tried to reach out to a few of them. You know, I don't know exactly what's all going on. You know, it's not that I want to separate myself, but there has to be some sort of separation now that I have medically retired for my own sake, you know, for the team. But I think they're just trying to work through different solutions right now. Even though our team is young, they're still determined and they all have great abilities. So I think that they can turn around whatever little rocky patch we're going through because they all work super hard in practice. So I'm not worried.
So I know you only got to work with Coach Matters for only a couple of weeks, but as kind of an outsider now, what can you tell us about Allie and what she's brought to this program versus Leah?
It is hard to compare the two because they're both very different, but I love them both in different ways. You know, I think Allie brought in this like whole new energy to the team, which got everyone so excited. You know, it's hard when new coaches come in and it's like a fresh start, especially with three new staff. They have never worked together and then they're new to our team, but she brought a whole new energy and a new look to the game, which is really fun because, I mean, I had Coach Johnson for 3 years. And so it was just a little scary going into my senior year, having new coaching, but it was a really fun change. And it was just, it's nice to see how other people view the game versus what you've been so used to. And so I think that was a big thing. And she kind of brought this different side. And one thing I really like is she's like, just play. You know, sometimes when you get to this level, it's so, you get so worked up in like a scouting report and like all the stats and everything like that. But one thing I like is she always reminds us, like, just play, like, just have fun. And so that's one thing that I really love that she's brought into this program.
What's the biggest thing you think you're going to take with you moving forward from your career? Like, what was probably the biggest lesson you learned?
I think volleyball throughout college has like given me a lot more just like confidence in myself, and especially like leadership and like having my own voice. That is like one thing that these past couple of years have like been really instilled in me. So I think just moving forward, that's always great to have like in your career. And so that's one of the big things that I hope to bring forward.
So I was just going to keep talking maybe a little bit about this season. I know Tim alluded to it a little bit, but what have you thought about the freshmen in the team? You only got to work with them for a couple of weeks, but they obviously are getting a lot of playing time now without you and Caitlin and Sarah being injured and all of the above. What do you think of them so far from what you've seen?
Yeah, I think that they have been able to step up. It's not an easy role to just come in and start playing, you know what I mean? But they have been really open to just trying to learn everything, because it's a whole nother game when you come to college. So I think they're trying to like absorb everything and just try and turn around, you know, watching film and like evaluating what they're doing and then trying to like implement that in the next practice. Like, I think that's one thing that they all are really good at, is like reviewing what they're doing and then coming in the next day and being like, okay, I need to work on this and this and this. And sometimes it's intimidating to do that as a freshman. You just kind of like sit back and you just like kind of see what everyone else is doing first. But a lot of them have had the confidence to just be like, no, I'll go first. And I really like that about them. So they're kind of taking charge, which is needed if there's all of them on the court at once.
All right, enough retirement talk. Let's talk about some of the best moments for you on the court. You obviously said you dealt with injuries in the last 2 years, but it seemed like you really turned it on for the MVC tournament last year. You talked about that Loyola game, but also the one against Indiana State. What was different? I mean, did you just wake up and felt like winning those 2 days, or what happened?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember back to exactly. I don't know. Sometimes when you're just like in those high intense moments, you just like, not that you like black out the moment, but you're just like, it's go time, like, let's go. And I was just like so confident in our team, and it was so fun. And I think that's just like the whole vibe. Everyone was so confident in each other that it just, when you're in that positive environment, you're just like, let's go, like, let's keep going. So there was no stopping us then. So that's why I think we were able to come and reverse sweep Loyola, is because we were all confident in each other, even though we were down 2-0.
Well, how does it feel when you're down 2-0 in a conference championship like that? How do you remain and keep your head in the moment?
It's very, very challenging. I think it was just a lot of us were like positive self-talk. Because when you're down 2-0, it's so easy just to be like, well, it's over. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's, it's hard to stay away from that mindset. So I just remember it being a lot of positive self-talk. Like, when we were going into that third set, it was just like, we were going, I don't even know how to explain it. It was just like, we were going in. It was like this different energy. I don't know.
They hit that next gear. Yeah, they really.
Yeah, did. Yeah, yeah. That's a good way to put it.
So thank you, Nicole, for doing this. We want to give you a chance, though, if you want, to just thank anyone you wanted to over the last couple of years before we sign off.
That's hard. I feel like I have so many people to thank. You know, I just, the whole Redbird community, there is like so many more people than I ever could have imagined that support the team. And I've kind of realize that now that I've stepped away from volleyball, just like the people that have reached out to me, even within the Redbird community. So just thank you to all the fans, coaches, support staff, like you guys covering this story, you know, that's super cool. So it's just everyone I want to give a thanks to, because I really, really enjoyed my time here at ISU. And so, yeah.
A lot of former players decide to become broadcasters. So if you ever want, we can give you a headset and come onto a call.
I'll let you know.
Thank you, Nicole. We appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
That was former Redbird volleyball Nicole Lund. It was a great interview with Nicole. We really enjoyed it. Dane and I got to do that with Tim Zellback, and don't know, Dan, it was just good to hear from her and talk about some of her favorite memories. Obviously an unfortunate retirement, but
like just good vibes from her, honestly.
Yeah.
Like we talked about how like it just seemed like she had come to peace with her decision, which I know as a former athlete that should have medically retired multiple times that it's a very mature and difficult decision to make. So kudos to her.
You know, it's such a tough decision too. And listening to the interview, it sounds like you said she was at peace and that she really thought about that decision, both her and Caitlin Prozinski. And it's never easy, especially when your medical side of things gets in the way. But definitely they're going to be missed. But I'm expecting this team to, you know, bounce back. You know, they'll be fine.
So it's interesting hearing Nicole say during that interview that she thinks Allie Matters brings something to the table that she hasn't seen throughout her first couple years under Leah Johnson. And Kushner said something similar when I talked to her preseason, and Prozinski said something similar when David and I talked to her a couple weeks ago. Obviously now Prozinski and Lund both retired, but and Kushner is hurt for the foreseeable future. But it's interesting to see from all of them that they're not dissing Leah or really totally complimenting Allie. They're just saying a fresh pair of eyes is helpful. And I just think it's crazy that all three veterans all phrased it like that.
And like we've been talking about these past few weeks, this is a new system. This is a new team, a new head coaching system. And she, the way that Allie Matters is coming in to this Redbird locker room and instilling her own plan to bring success to this team, it's really encouraging. And like you said last week, we were talking about how we had noticed Allie Matters was playing a lot of the younger girls, a lot of the younger players. Maybe mm-hmm. that could be a part of her regime, what she's trying to bring here.
I think Allie does bring, like, just an intensity. Just watching them play and watching her coach, like, which I can appreciate. But something I took away from the interview was talking to Nicole. I was kind of surprised to see that she really wasn't going to be involved with the team post-retirement. Like, I was kind of surprised she wasn't going to take up, like, some kind of advisory role.
Oh, yeah, I mean, even in, like, reaching out to Nicole to get her to do this interview, it was we were talking one-to-one about it, which is rare. Usually you have to go through the SID and the sports information director, and that is rare to just be able to talk one-on-one with an athlete and say, hey, let's do this interview. Because at the end of the day, she is now a former Redbird athlete. It'd be no different if we called James Robinson. You know what I mean?
That's the tough part about it. And I'm just assuming here, when you have that competitive drive, that competitive fire, it could be tough to watch your team.
Oh yeah.
You know, maybe go through ups and downs and you not being able to help, especially if medical reasonings have gotten in the way of that. It's probably tough for her and Caitlin to watch this unfold and them just not being able to contribute.
I do think the cold streak makes it a little easier to retire, I would imagine.
I can see that. Yeah, and it's not to say that they're not going to bounce back, because I think they will. They always have found a way after slow starts to make it at least a reasonable season here. But I think that they had been kind of chewing on the decision for a while, and I think especially for Nicole, who this was going to be her last year, she said, I think it was a pretty easy decision for her. I was a little bit more surprised by Caitlin Prozinski, who just told David and I 2 weeks ago that she is looking forward to not even only playing as a Redbird for the next 2 years, but in grad school. But obviously she must have heard word from a doctor or something, I believe, kind of like Nicole said, that maybe one too many injuries stacked up. And this Redbirds team is beaten up right now. And like Dane said, it's going to really open the door to let some of these freshmen play, which they have been playing well. I saw Emily Weber had a career game the other day, but just hasn't seen the wins yet. And they have an easier weekend against Evansville and Indiana State to see if they can try and get back on the right track.
This is where that foundation that we talk about really starts to show itself. How can these girls go out there, continue to compete with all the outside noise still coming in? And, you know, who better than Coach Allie Matters and what we've seen so far than to orchestrate and instruct this team to, you know, continue to go out there and put on a good performance?
Even if it's a totally different roster, I think the future is still bright for this Redbird volleyball
team. Oh, for sure.
When we come back from the break, we're going to talk to Julian Voss, talk a little bit about the NBA and the NFL. You're listening to The Red Zone.
I'm Dan Muller, basketball coach of your Illinois State Redbirds, and you're listening to The Red Zone, only on 1033 WZND.
That was former Vancouver Grizzly NBA player Dan Muller queuing us in for the NBA segment here, joined by WZND's Julian Voss. Julian, thank you for joining us.
How you doing, Mikey?
I'm doing pretty well. It's great to have you here on the show. We had a nice football call together last week there at Hancock, and it's good to have you on. It's always great to talk about some national sports. And so you want to talk a little bit about the NBA, and I know we did a little Bulls preseason preview last week, but I think we want to talk just broader about the NBA. So first and foremost, why don't you tell us, who do you think is first in line in your head to win the MVP this year?
I feel like after a tough ACL injury and how the Clippers played last season, I can see Kawhi Leonard coming back this season, after being out for a minute and being back with Paul George, and I feel a team that I feel like could also make the NBA Finals this season, I can see Kawhi winning the MVP also.
They do have a pretty good lineup. We were just talking about it before we got back on air. John Wall is back. Mm-hmm. You know, he could be having a redemption season as well. Paul George, he was on and off again last season. The brunt of the work really fell on him last year. Mm-hmm. I think he only played about 50-something games out of the 82. And I know he's going to be welcoming back to Kawhi Leonard and John Wall. You know, they got a pretty good team.
They could potentially be the best team in L.A.
They Ooh. Definitely could be.
I don't know about that.
especially when you have Russell Westbrook and the drama king he is.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be remiss to not say that LeBron James is not a great player. He's the best player of this generation, but I think that Lakers team is just haunted. I mean, there's nothing going on.
There's nothing
there.
Left in the tank.
No, there's nothing left there.
Well, you look
they
at
got
them.
A ring. They got the Lemicky ring.
Yeah, and the reason why that worked is because the greatest or one of the greatest players ever got to rest for 2 months and then came back completely fresh legged and went to work.
I like what Jamal Murray said in regards to the NBA bubble season, how that was probably the most difficult championship to ever win because it was just ball. Mm-hmm. There was no, like, obviously, yeah. like, crowd noise plays a factor.
Well,
into it.
It's no surprise then that LeBron James won the ring because he was the best player on those courts and he had 2 months of off. And yeah, like you said, it's just street ball, basically.
Stop the presses. Me and Mikey Fernelli just agreed on something.
We did. It's rare. A little handshake in studio there.
Let me look outside. Our pigs flying.
Dave, what do you think about your MVP pick coming into this year?
It's a number of people that go through my head, but one guy who has just been snubbed from this MVP race for the past 2 or 3 years, Joel Embiid from the Philadelphia 76ers. Last year, he had a phenomenal year. I was very surprised that he wasn't, you know, considered a little bit more heavily for that MVP. I know Jokic won it for the second year in a row, but I think he's going to come out this year guns blazing. He is upset. He's going to get that MVP this year.
I agree with that one. And he was on that 76ers team that's been kind of just like stuck at the top of that Eastern Conference for a couple of years. Went through the whole Ben Simmons era, had a couple of different free agents a couple of years in a row to try and finally get over the hump. Jimmy Butler, I think, specifically. And what do you think about that 76ers team going into this year?
It's so unpredictable. I've never seen a team have so many superstars come through that team organization and just not be able to produce. It's like they win all in the regular season. When they get to the playoffs, they just get beat out by Giannis or
Kawhi. That Kawhi. One year at the
right. I can't believe an athlete would come through Philly and leave with a sour taste in their mouth. That blows my mind.
I think I want to go next with my pick. We were talking about it before we came on the show when we were just prepping. I think it's finally time for Luka Doncic.
Do you think so?
I think he is that playmaker. We talked about it in the playoffs. I think he can take it into another gear this season. Seems like every time that I do a sim thing on NBA 2K, the video game, they always say that during the 2020s at some point, Luka's going to win like 4 MVPs in a row. So maybe video games become real life, and maybe he finally takes it to that next level and plays 82 like he does in the playoffs.
The only thing that worries me about Luka is he generally has no help around him. It's him.
That makes MVP easier to win, in my opinion.
But you also, see Russ, you see Harden on the Rockets, Julian.
With the MVP, he also needs to be like over a 5 seed, because we saw with like Jokic a few seasons ago, he could have won it. But Giannis won it because the Bucks were also a high seed.
Mm-hmm.
So his only like bad issue is I feel like the Mavericks will be a bottom 5 seed.
See, and I think that's ridiculous, because I think the Mavericks without Luka Doncic are the worst team in the league, and it's not even really close. See, and for me, my MVP is going to be interesting, because you guys picked Kawhi and Joel, who don't play enough games, in my opinion, to when it comes to load management, and the best ability is availability. So I'm going to go with Zion Williamson.
Oh, my God.
What?
Here we go. Jaguars all over.
So here's my argument. Zion Williamson's coming off an injury, and he looks great. He's jumping out
of
the gym.
Does look solid.
He's not going to do any load management, because the pressure's on that he's got to be the guy, like the guy that they expected, especially with Ja being the second pick, and he's that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And that Pelicans team, I think, is going to shock the world. I think they're going to dominate.
I think they could be pretty solid.
I think they've got the veteran piece in CJ McCollum. I think B.I. is the perfect second man to Zion Williamson. I think Zion Williamson's going to average 38-4 this year.
But, you know, one of the things about Zion, and it's funny you said the best, what was it, the best
ability is availability.
You know, he hasn't been available.
Yeah.
I think he's going to come out with a big chip on his shoulder. He even talked about it in an interview, how it really affected him, how people responded to maybe some of his weight gain, or how he didn't look the most healthiest last year in pregame warmups. I think he's coming out with a chip on his shoulder. So I could see where you say, you know, he could come back and have a little bit of redemption season. But I just don't. I don't know, man. I don't think he's going to produce to that MVP level.
When I broke my arm in third grade, I was in pretty good shape, and I put on some baby fat when I broke my arm. So I'm equating it to that. Give me Zion Williamson as my MVP. Julian's giving me the craziest look in studio right now.
The only good thing I see about Zion, when he wasn't injured, he also started in the All-Star game, averaged at least 25 points, I think 6 rebounds, and maybe 5 assists.
But does it hurt his development, having missed basically that whole year and then some change? And
did
then also
Joel's development, missing 2 years?
No, but I think each case is different. And I think they are different players. At the end of the day, they have different body types, even though they are similar positions.
When you're talking about it, Zion was supposed to be the next LeBron. I know a lot of people, help me out here, Dane. A lot of people were supposed to say that this guy, Wembanyama
from France.
They said he's supposed to be the next LeBron, but it's the same thing with Zion. He came into the league. He was supposed to be the next LeBron. He was supposed to be the next face of the NBA, and it just hasn't been that.
I think physically the LeBron comparison makes sense for Zion, but his game is more of a young Shaq. And then Wembanyama is a prospect that's never been seen before because he has, like, the body of, like, a Giannis Antetokounmpo, but plays like a Kevin Durant type, where he's got a pretty stroke.
And also,
like, he has a nice shot.
I would even put Carl Anthony Towns as his comparison as well because his three ball he can shoot.
Yeah.
Like you said, along with...
But Wembanyama's 7'4". He's a rim defender, an elite rim defender, and he moves like a gazelle, like a unicorn. Ryan Russillo said on his podcast that he isn't as high on Wembanyama because he is like that Kristaps build where the body,
put on some weight.
Yeah. And the human body shouldn't move like that.
And I've seen videos of Wembanyama too, like 2 years ago. I could also feel like he's going to be like Giannis. Giannis was skinny when he came into the league, and he also did grow a couple of inches too. And Wembanyama, they said he's supposed to get up to 7'5 or at least 7'6 too.
But we've already seen with Chet Holmgren missing the year with the Achilles injury, like
before he even played a real game. I mean, it's insane.
The human body has limitations physically.
Can we just talk about him for a second? The most overhyped draft prospect I've ever seen in my life, Chet Holmgren. I do not like him, man.
It'd be interesting to see what he's going to do when he actually does get a chance to play, not just a game, but 82 games, because he's going to be a load management kind of player.
I don't like him as a 5, but I really like him as a 4. Like he projects to be like Kevin Durant. It's a worse scoring, better ball moving Kevin Durant, in my opinion.
Him as well. He's going to need to put on some weight. Can you imagine him in the box with Zion Williamson and LeBron James? Oh, that's baby food for them.
Yeah. In the pickup game, LeBron was the one that he drove on and hurt his leg, too. So if it happened in an actual game, like, he could go against a guy like, you could see, like, Steven Adams, Jonas Valanciunas, and he could also get, like, pummeled.
Well, OKC, who is missing Chet Holmgren this year, is projected to not be great again. And they could run a starting lineup next year that size is averaged at 6'6", with their starting point guard being Josh Giddey. And that lineup could be a lot of fun to watch. And I think you can make up for some, like, if you had your rim defender and Victor Wembanyama, and then you had Chet Holmgren at the 4, who cares? Who cares?
Is the NBA slowly turning back into a big man league? Like,
I mean, look at your best options right now. Even the guys we're talking about who are solid offensive players with great shots, and Giannis and the Carl Anthony Towns, those are tall guys. These are not short guys.
Giannis
anymore.
Is developing a jump shot too. Like, yeah. I know everyone, it's the every year thing with, like,
even Kevin Durant has a beautiful shot, and he's not short. He's really tall,
and he's the greatest scorer of all time, in my opinion. In my humble opinion,
at least one of the most dominant.
No, he's the greatest pure scorer of all time.
By what standards?
You can't stop him from anywhere. He's dangerous from everywhere.
I mean, you couldn't stop Michael Jordan from anywhere.
I think MJ is great, and I just think though that, like, Kevin Durant could guard MJ. I just don't think Kevin Durant is guardable, especially in the post. Like, Kobe Bryant said he was also
biased, though.
Kobe Bryant said that he couldn't want, like, Kevin Durant, when he came into the league, he couldn't go to his left. That's the only way that Kobe Bryant could stop him. The second Kevin Durant learned how to do it, he just could not stop KD. It was impossible. And that's coming from the Mamba.
So after the show, I'm going to send you this documentary called The Last Dance, and I want you to watch every single episode,
and then
we're
going to
come back next week.
I watched it every day it came out during the pandemic. Great show.
Awesome. Yeah.
Such a pandemic. Oh, my God.
And the best episode is the Rodman episode. No one can tell me otherwise. Like, that man is so...
No, I love the one where it ends with Jordan talking about, they finally ask him, like, what do you think about people saying you were too hard on your teammates and stuff like that?
That's my
and
favorite
then,
line.
Yeah,
from
and
the
then
whole...
he says, if you don't want to play that way, don't play that way.
I love
the ump, starts crying. Yeah.
I love the emotion in that. This is going to sound so bad. When I was growing up, like, I was kind of a diva playing hockey, and I would get really competitive. But that's the way Jordan played. If you don't want to play that way, don't play that way. Don't play with me.
Before we do our pick six segment, let's just go around really fast the next minute or two and just give our clip this audio later and see how off we were. Finals prediction for the NBA. I'll go first. Let's do, you don't have to say winner, just say your two. I'm going to go with Golden State again and the Nets with Durant finally kind of getting back up there. That'd be an awesome matchup.
So I was going to say the Nets, but I just don't think they would have enough to stop Giannis. I'm going to go Golden State and the Milwaukee Bucks.
Julian Voss.
This season, I feel like the Bucks are going to go to the finals. I thought they were going to go to the finals last season if Chris Middleton didn't get injured against the Bulls.
Oh, for sure.
So I have them against the Clippers this season because I feel like Kawhi and Paul George will be the best duo in the league paired with John Wall, who's going to have a good comeback season also.
I love that pick. Dane?
Give me the Cleveland Cavaliers and Golden State bringing it back.
Oh, my goodness.
Wait,
oh,
can
man.
We talk? Okay, before we go, the Cavaliers, like, they're an excellent roster. I feel like people have the old Cavaliers stuck in their head. That roster's nuts.
You said this, though, a couple weeks ago, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. When Donovan Mitchell first got traded, it was one of our first shows this semester.
I love their depth.
We had a whole segment about the NBA and the offseason. We talked a lot about the Cavaliers.
And I think the Cavaliers and Golden State Warriors is probably going to go down as one of the greatest rivalries of all time, in my opinion.
You want to do a whole Lakers and Celtics thing. You want to make it multiple generations now. A new-look Cavaliers team versus this kind of a new-look Warriors team. Same core, but a lot of great young prospects.
Fresh faces,
young
for
talent.
Sure.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to have our weekly pick six segment where you can just hear who we are going to pick and then make your bets against us. We'll be right back.
Hey, this is Dickie V, baby, and you're listening to The Red Zone, baby, only on 103.3 WZMT.
If you ever visit the WZND News and Sports office, you would see that on one of our whiteboards, we have the standings for pick six. We have all five of our players listed on the board, and I realize I never shared it with the people. So in first, we have David Moses, 19-11 through 5 weeks of picks. Then we have Steve Cease, 17-13. The guest, which is a rotating person every week, obviously, 16-14. Dane, also 16-14. And me, after an atrocious 1-5 week last week, 13-17. I was over 500 this time last week, I believe. I did terrible this week.
It's okay. This is a bounce-back week, and yeah. I hope that you make the right decision with the Bears. And
I hope you don't.
Well, thank you, David. I think you know what the right decision is. We'll get to that one last, though. It feels so good to have the Bears one to say last, because usually we get that one out of the way, but there's no choice when it's Thursday Night Football. Let's talk a little bit first about Dane's favorite team, the Green Bay Packers, and the other New York team, the New York Jets. So coming off a loss in London back across the pond, what do you think going into this one, Dane?
I'm nervous. I'm a big Saleh guy. Robert Saleh is a great coach. The Packers, just they're going to get better as the year goes on, but their schedule to start hasn't been great. And the Giants, they did some gadget plays. Aaron Rodgers needs to stick to the game plan, stick to the run. They abandoned it. He audibled too much. I'm going to go with the Packers. I'm going to quote me on this, though. I would not be surprised if the Jets take this one.
Me
I would
either.
Not at all.
Me neither. I'm going to go with the Packers because it feels like the safe pick, and I love home teams this week.
Dan? Yeah, I'm taking the Packers, but I do agree with you, Dane. I'm going to continue to say this. The Packers are going to get stronger each week. I'm not a Packers fan. I'm really against the Packers. But coming from a realistic standpoint, I think Aaron Rodgers and this receiving core is going to start to heat up as soon as, you know, right as the season gets older.
Julian, what do you think?
And I hate to say it, but the Packers are going to win it this week. I feel like Rodgers will not let his team lose to a team like the Jets, who in his whole career he hasn't really lost to them. So he doesn't really want to put that on his record also.
Well, Steve also said the Packers, so that can't move anything in the standings. Thanks, guys. now we're going to talk about the Cardinals and Seahawks, a battle of two different birds. And we have Steve saying the Cardinals, and I'm saying Geno Smith and the Seattle Seahawks. I've been impressed the last couple weeks by Geno. I picked him up in fantasy, played him last week, had 32 points off him, and I think Derek Carr is going to stay on the bench for now in favor of Geno Smith. It's a two-quarterback league, and you know I can't go against Brady. So I'm going to go with the Seahawks so I can root for my fantasy team.
Yeah, I think I like the Cardinals for this game specifically. I don't think the Cardinals are as talented as they were in years past, however. But I do like the Cardinals. I think that Kyler Murray is going to exploit the Seahawks defense. This just shows you how bad the Seahawks defense has been. They just picked up Michael Bennett for his third tenure with the Seahawks, so that can't be good at all.
Julian, what do you think?
I got the Seahawks this week. I feel like Geno Smith's had such a solid season so far that he could outplay Kyler Murray because Kyler Murray, he's been struggling a little bit without DeAndre Hopkins. So I feel like once DeAndre Hopkins comes back, Kyler Murray will be back to maybe elite status. But right now, I feel like the Seahawks will take this one.
Settle the tie, Dane.
I'm going to go with the Cardinals here for the reason being that they gave the Eagles a very respectable game last week. The defense is getting better. They have a solid pass defense with Byron Murphy and Budda Baker. I also think that
the injury to James Conner is going to force them to get creative at running back with Eno Benjamin. And Eno Benjamin, I don't think he's going to take over the starting role, but James Conner will not be your starter by season's end. So give me the Cardinals.
A rematch of last year's probably best playoff game, the Bills and the Chiefs. Who do we think in this one? This is going to be a tough one to pick. Dane, what do you think?
I can't believe Mahomes. It's like for the first time in his career after 47 games, he's a home underdog or it's something crazy like that. I'm not betting against Patrick Mahomes, especially Arrowhead Stadium is probably one of the last places where home field advantage still matters. Give me the Chiefs.
I'm going to agree with that. Second time we've agreed today on the show. That's crazy. And like you said, Dane, I think Mahomes has really kind of turned it on, especially in the last couple weeks, starting at that game against Tampa Bay. And I think even though Buffalo is awesome and Josh Allen is honestly maybe a front runner right now for the MVP, I think Patrick Mahomes is doing really good things out there in Kansas City and maybe thinks this could be another year we can go all the way.
Since that playoff game, this is the game that everyone in the National Football League has been looking forward to. Probably the two most talented teams in the NFL going head-to-head. It makes it so hard to decide a winner. But I've said this since week one. This is the Josh Allen season, and I will be foolish to bet against him. He is the MVP this year so far. I'm taking the Bills.
Julian Voss, settle the tie. 2-2 right now.
I also believe that the Bills will win this game because I think this is also Josh Allen's MVP season. They've been losing the Chiefs the past couple of years. And this will be the year I feel like they actually outplay them because the Chiefs do not have the same weapons as they used to before.
Steve also went with the Bills, so that makes it 3-2 in favor of Buffalo. Let's go out to Sunday Night Football. That'll be in Philadelphia, a battle of a division that was once called the NFC Least and is now the NFC Beast.
This is going to be a really good game. I was looking at the schedule on last Sunday and realized that the Cowboys versus the Eagles were going, and this game is going to be a lot bigger than a lot of people are thinking it's going to be. I take the Eagles in this game. I said last week that this Cooper Rush luck is going to run out eventually. And although I was wrong last week, I think this will be the week.
I completely agree with that one. I think this Eagles offense is nothing to be messed with. And I think they have a really solid defense behind them too. And the Cowboys are a fluke. They're a pretender. Julian?
I believe that the Eagles will also win this game. I think Cooper Rush has gotten lucky the past like five or so games he's played.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I don't think this will keep going against a team that's been playing amazing like the Eagles, so I got the Eagles winning it.
Dane?
I like the Eagles. I think they're the best team. I think the Cowboys do have a top five defense. They're legit. Micah Parsons is going to be up there for deep hole. That's what I was going to say. And I would really like to see a defensive player get thrown in the MVP conversation too, but the Eagles are just too good.
Monday Night Football. The NFL needs to stop putting the Broncos on primetime, please. This Broncos team is terrible, and Russell Wilson has said it for weeks, and that they're terrible. But talking about first the Broncos and Chargers, what I meant, he says, is Broncos country, let's ride. We have the audio there. David, you want to go ahead with that one?
Broncos country, let's ride.
I still love playing that. We're still going to be playing that all season long. The Chargers and the Broncos Monday night. I'm going to go with the Chargers in this one. The Broncos have shown me that they don't even have a chance to win games they should win. And so this isn't even a game they should win.
So, the Chargers have had a few weeks where it's like, it seems like ever since Justin Herbert got that rib injury against the Chiefs?
Yeah, it was that first, I think it was week two. It was Chiefs and Chargers, yeah.
The offense kind of slowed down. I have them in fantasy, so I've really been paying attention to them. But I'm still going to go with the Chargers. The Broncos are really bad this year. So, yeah, the Chargers are going to win.
Who would have thought that out of that Russell Wilson trade, we'd see a better Seahawks team in week six than the Broncos team? I think it's crazy. But the NFL works in mysterious ways.
Geno Smith is outperforming Russell Wilson right now. That should be a headline story.
They wrote him off, but he didn't write back. Julian Voss?
I got the Chargers winning this week. I think the Broncos, each week that they've been on primetime, they shouldn't have been because they have been pretty bad this season. I think the Chargers are also on the come up this season. Austin Eckler has been playing like the best running back in the league so far next to Nick Chubb. So I think they're going to keep it going.
Dane, to round it off.
Can I pick neither team and just take the under?
I wish.
I mean, like, all of the Chargers, Mike Williams is sick right now, I think, and then Keenan Allen doesn't look like he's going to play. But Nathaniel Hackett is so, it's literally the battle of the most inept coaches in the league. I think I could run a better team.
give me
Brandon Staley and the Los Angeles Chargers.
I saw a great tweet that said, somebody, an NFL insider, said they'd love to see two angry Twitter fans coach a game and to have the coaches sit at home on their phones and criticize them the whole game. And so Steve said the Chargers in that one, and so that makes it another sweep. You guys are really not making it easy for me to move up the scoreboard this week. And then finally,
You're going to make it easy with this one.
Chicago Bears.
Thursday night football. You know, we were talking on the walk over here. It's a shame. The Bears are such a Sunday team because I like when the Bears hide at like noon and sometimes get a nice win, usually lose, because it's just like, it's just us that are disappointed or surprised then. But when the Bears play on primetime, they're always bad, and it's just an easy way for everyone to start making fun of us. I'm still going to go with the Bears because I don't think this Commanders team is any good, and I don't think they have a good run game to rely on against us. But
I cannot wait.
I still am going to go with the Bears.
Yeah, we've got a whole 5 minutes to talk about this one. I'm going to go with the Bears, my Bears. This is the first time in 2 weeks that I'm going with my Bears. I think they had a really good game last week against the Vikings. Justin Fields and this offense is kind of starting to get it together. I'm still not, you know, pleased. I left last game still with a discomfort and not the most confidence. But I'm going with the Bears. I think they're getting it together, nowhere where they need to be, and I think this defense is getting stronger every week. Chicago Bears.
Julian, I think I know what you're going to say.
Oh, I'm obviously picking the Bears this week.
Bear down.
I do think that both these teams are pretty bad, but I think that the Bears offense can outplay the Commanders offense this week too, because Justin Fields will have a good game rolling out the pocket while Carson Wentz isn't really been doing that great on that this season, so I got the Bears winning it.
Always a Lions fan. Steve went with the Commanders, and our resident Packers fan, Dane Dreyfus.
You tried to, like, gaslight me into taking the Bears this week.
I did, because I've taken the Packers 3 weeks in a row. I thought if there's ever a shot for you
what's
to say
their
favorite. I thought if there's ever a shot for you to pick the Bears on the show, it's tonight.
I guess it's not happening. Oh. Like, sorry for the silence, but it had to speak for itself. Like, I love Brian Robinson to score his first career touchdown tonight. Curtis Samuels.
What did you say to me in the office? You said you came up for me to meet Brian Robinson or something like that. When I kept saying the run game's not gonna work out.
I can't wait for the league to be introduced to Brian Robinson. Like, it's gonna be all like, and his initial introduction.
But Brian Robinson's not Dalvin Cook or Aaron Jones. It's just not gonna work that way.
Second NFL game. How do you know that?
He's just exactly. He's just not made out to be that player yet.
Yeah,
so I just don't know.
Justin Fields is probably like the 34th best quarterback.
But that's
NFL.
The other side of the ball. He used to get him in field goal range,
you guys know Carson Wentz is top five in the NFL in passing.
Can we just stop this Justin Fields hate?
No, I've watched him play. He's so bad.
I've told you before, I will take Justin Fields over Carson Wentz any day of the week.
Carson Wentz was almost an MVP.
Yeah, almost. But after that knee injury at the LA Coliseum, he's never been the same.
Mitch was a Pro Bowler with a good defense too.
Correct. You see where he is now.
Yeah. Dude, Carson Wentz has the talent. Carson Wentz is kind of like a modern day Brett Favre, aka he who shall not be named. There's a lot of quarterbacks that don't deserve to be named, but
Aaron Rodgers.
Like Carson Wentz just makes really poor decisions, like that Tennessee game. And I don't even think like the linebacker made a great play on that ball. He almost slipped that into McKissick. And the weapons, like, I just don't see how you guys are so like in on the Bears.
I'm not in on the Bears.
This is probably the last game they can win this year, so I think you're trying to talk yourself into it. I still don't
fair,
think. It's the upside.
What's Carson Wentz's record in prime time?
6-0.
He's
but it doesn't work like the Kirk Cousins thing where
I feel like always
winning in prime time versus always losing in prime time. It's different.
The same thing.
Winning has gotta be just like a luck thing, and he had a great defense with the Eagles. And did he ever play in primetime as a Colt?
Absolutely. I'm sure he did. I'm sure he played Jacksonville.
They were pretty good.
Really,
I have a feeling that if Justin Fields had the same weapons as Carson Wentz did, the Commanders would be a way better team. Because Wentz is way worse than Fields.
Oh, my.
I agree.
If he had the same weapons as Wentz.
Take.
Well, Fields gets sacked 17% of all plays.
Wentz is the most sacked quarterback in the NFL, so that is irrelevant. That is absolutely irrelevant.
I'm just saying we'd have a better opinion on Fields if we were actually able to see him play with a good defense.
here's my take on it, and this is the last take I'm going to give. For a person that watches in-depth interviews, games, game highlights, Justin Fields is not the problem. We have a terrible offensive line with wide receivers who act like they don't have hands, a tight end who it says every offseason, oh, it's the best offseason that I've ever had.
And this is the reason they're taking the Bears over the Commanders tonight? Like, you hear yourself?
But
like
you said,
we're not high on the Bears. We just think
you're high on the Bears over
better than the Commanders.
We're high on the Bears over the Commanders. It's not that tough of a pick, in my opinion.
I think it's like the Commanders gave the Titans game. The Titans would kill the Bears. The Commanders could easily. I'm trying to think of their schedule so far this year, and I feel like they've been in almost every game. It's a poor decision at the end that's killed them.
Bears can say the same thing, but I'm just going to leave. Like, the game will speak for itself. Like, whoever wins this one can just roast each other at the start of the next show.
The real winner of this conversation is Jeff Bezos. He's going to get all of us to watch Thursday Night Football on Amazon Prime. I can't get over that. Thank you for listening to this edition of The Red Zone. For Julian Voss, David Moses, Dane Dreyfus, and myself, Mikey Fernelli, you've been listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again. Download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.